I open the House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities. It's Thursday, April 9th, 2009. So, we've got lots of business today. We will not be having a work session on 26-28. We've got some amendments that will be coming in on that one. And I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2924. This was one carried over from, we had a little bit of testimony on this right after the farm-to-school bill the other day, and we had some folks that kindly agreed to stay over, and they have other things to do today, so we're going to get them up here quickly. Folks who are here for farm to school, it's going to be at the bottom of the list because we're still waiting to see if we can get the fiscal back before the meeting's over. We're pretty confident we can. And with that, I think we will get Patty Whitney-Wise, Deanna Hartwig, and John Steubenball up at the dais. That's the dais? This is the dais. What is that? The desk? The witness table. I don't know what that thing's called.
We'll never get through it if we don't cut it back.
You got about 3 minutes each, if that's okay, and then we got a lot of stuff. Please, Patty.
Yes, Chair Clem and members of the committee, I'm Patty Whitney-Wise with the Oregon Hunger Task Force, and we're pleased to be here today supporting additional funding for the WIC Senior Farm Direct programs. Just very briefly, these programs provide vouchers for low-income seniors and women and children in the Women, Infants, and Children program to use at local certified farmers markets and roadside stands. For seniors, they get about $30. For the women and children, they get $20. It's not a huge amount of money, but it gets them to those markets, gets them familiar with those markets, and helps small farmers as well with the purchases that are made. In fact, in years past, many farmers who participate have grown specific crops that they've found that both the women, children, and seniors want to purchase, so that it's helped increase their sales. And it also helps with obesity prevention. It helps provide those fruits and vegetables that are often hard to purchase on a low budget because they are more costly. For all of those reasons, we support an increase in this program. Currently, what this extra funding would do is guarantee that most seniors eligible would be able to participate, and some additional women and children. We only serve between 20 and 25% of the women and children eligible right now. Part of that reason was that in the past they could only go to the farmers markets, which left out a lot of the rural communities. But now that certified roadside stands are also available to them, that opens it up to the whole state. So a lot more women and children can take advantage of these vouchers in rural communities with the passage of this bill. And I'm available to answer any questions the committee has.
Thank you very much. Deanna.
Thank you. Chair Clem, members of the committee, I'm Deanna Hartwig, Administrator of the Office of Federal Resource and Financial Eligibility, Seniors and People with Disabilities, Department of Human Services. I just want to let you know that seniors are very enthusiastic about this program. We have very high participation. The opportunity to receive additional funds at a time when there is an increase in food insecurity among low-income Oregonians would be very beneficial. We'd be happy to have the additional funds. It's not in the governor's budget, as you well know, but we did want you to realize that for the senior population that we serve, they look forward to this program with great enthusiasm every year.
Mr. Chair, members, good morning. My name is John Steubenball. I'm the Director of Advocacy at Oregon Food Bank. Just very briefly, we're happy to be here today to add our voices of support to this legislation. This is one of three top priorities for Oregon Food Bank this legislative session. We know, for example, from surveys of emergency food box recipients that children are very much disproportionately represented among hungry Oregonians. And so we're especially excited about about the WIC portion of this legislation as it will benefit low-income families with children. We think that's a very good provision. Clearly, this will also benefit seniors and provide them with additional nutritional resources. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, any questions for this panel? Representative Winger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Please help me understand how this is different from just the normal food program and the Oregon Trail Card and things like that.
It's food stamps and the Women, Infants, and Children program. Okay. So in food stamps, you get an amount of money on the Oregon Trail Card to purchase foods at the local grocery stores. Some farmers markets allow those cards to be used there as well. And that covers a broad spectrum of people up to 185% of poverty. In the Women, Infants, and Children program, that's a prescriptive package of vouchers. So they look at the health and nutrition concerns and then prescribe for them certain foods that they then can use those vouchers for in the local stores. A number of years ago, they added in Washington, D.C., this fruit and vegetable voucher program for WIC clients. Their vouchers were not able to be used for fresh fruits and vegetables, and it was a way of supplementing, recognizing that those are often the most expensive items for a family to buy, and if they've got a limited budget, they're going to buy the things that give them more bang for the buck because they only have a small amount of money with which to purchase their food. So fruits and vegetables are often the last thing because of the cost. In surveys, most low-income families say that they wish they could purchase more fresh fruits and vegetables, but the cost is really a factor for them in doing that. So the vouchers help bridge that. It gives them some money to purchase those fresh fruits and vegetables in markets.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, follow-up.
So it does that because the voucher itself is limited to fresh fruits and vegetables? That's all they can use it for?
Correct, and that's true for the seniors as well. That was added then later, a few years later, because of the value of again, seniors, many are on fixed incomes and don't have the money that they need to purchase those higher-cost items but desire them. So
one final point. Definitely, Mr. Chair. So help me understand how the voucher itself works and how it's redeemed at the farmer's market and how we ensure that it isn't used for something else or how we even track whether it's used at all.
We do track. They get actual coupons in the mail. For seniors, maybe Deanna might describe that process. They're a little bit different. Do you want to do that first and then I'll...
Again, for the record, Deanna Hartwig. Yes, we produce vouchers for each senior. We have them. Each senior is identified by name. We track the number on the actual check or voucher that they receive. So when the farmers return them for redemption, we can track how many of the seniors who received coupons actually used them and what was the redemption of the coupons that they got. So we monitor the program quite detailed, mainly because we'd like to know, and also we have federal requirements to track in that way.
And so for the WIC clients, usually they get they may get mailed now, but in the past they were given to them at one of their visits to the office. And again, the vouchers are collected by the farmers and then redeemed at a local bank. There are banks identified all over the state, and then the banks turn those into the state for redemption. So it's specifically for the markets for fruits and vegetables.
I want to understand how it is specific to fruits and vegetables, and if I receive one in the mail, who can I go and use it with, and how do they know they're a person who can accept it? And you know, I guess when I go to the farmer's market, is that the only thing that is sold at the farmer's market is fruits and vegetables? Or, you know, how is that voucher limited to just fruits and vegetables and a person selling those to me?
Well, I believe it's actually indicated on the vouchers, and the farmers do go through training. And the list of certified, they're only redeemable at markets, at farmer's markets and roadside stands that have been certified.
Uh-huh.
So there's a list of those that are compiled so people know where they can go. And there is some information sent out to all of them. I'm not part of the state agency, this is sort of secondhand. And I don't know if the WIC person, Catherine, is she here? You can do, okay. Dalton Hobbs could also give you more detail if you wanted more specifics exactly how administratively
it works. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, you bet. Okay. Thank you. And I will call Catherine Bradley. She's here. This is also a note. She may be in another committee.
That's correct, Chair Clem. And also, we had a farmer coming. I'm not sure he's here yet, no. Mr. Zielinski. Okay. So,
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't we, I can close the public hearing and reopen
pass
it later.
The bill.
What's that?
We can talk for another 2 hours, but let's pass the bill.
Well, there's another reason we can't do that quite yet. So I'm going to close this public hearing. We'll reopen it when the folks come in. House Bill 2924. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 22. No, I'm sorry. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2218. It's carried over from the 7th, and this is our bill on the surcharge on the hunting tags for the Access and Habitat Fund, increasing it from $2 to $4 and extending the sunset on the surcharges for 10 more years. And we've got an amendment, the dash ones, which, do we need an explanation of the amendment? I think it's like we're deleting line 3, 1989. Maybe it's what the amendment really does. Tell you what, how about I take a motion on the amendment and then we'll discuss what it actually does, because it's sort of oddly, it's just a lot of deletions. And there may just be technical changes. Representative Wingert.
Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2218.
Representative Wingert moves the dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2218. So I need to understand what these do. Should I have the department come up?
Could we take a short recess so I can bring them up to speed?
Kurt, are you able to tell me what these do, please? It's a lot of moving around the lines with only, it looks like, one change. So.
Yeah, we're going to have one in the spirit of the last one.
Oh, do we need to section one?
Thank you, Chair Clem. For the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And these amendments are merely removing language that was referring to the restoration and enhancement surcharge.
Oh, that's right.
It was inadvertently left in this bill. So we wanted to clean that up here for your work session.
Because somebody had noticed that we might end up accidentally doing the fee twice if we pass both bills, and so we're getting it out of there with this one. So it's a fee reduction. Representative Gilliam, it's time for you to vote yes.
That's exciting.
That's right. Okay, so we've got a motion on the floor for the dash ones. Is there any objection to those amendments? If not, the amendments are adopted. Take a motion on the main bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2218 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2218 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Wingert.
People who know me know that I have taken a pretty hard stand against taxes and fees in this legislative session. This will be the hardest one for me to oppose, but I will oppose it because I believe the economic conditions of this state are such that for the government to increase its costs in any way on the people who have lost $40 to $50 billion in economic activity is wrong. It's badly timed, and unfortunately I can't support it.
Representative Krieger.
Normally I have kind of the same sentiments, but I also look at the constituent base of this department. You know, the hunters, the anglers that take part, and the things that they're demanding of the agency. And if you see where these dollars are going, I think it's a good investment, and for the amount of dollars that it takes, I think that the public gets more than that back by increased opportunity and more certainty. And with the department losing as much of the general fund that it has, the group that's working on the fee bill is having to take a second look also. We've got almost unanimous support from Oregon Hunters, Steelheaders, two different commercial interests, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. You just go on and on. So there is a willingness to step up. Now, I realize that's not the individual person out there, but this is kind of the overarching groups that represent probably over 100,000 plus people that belong to these organizations that they're kind of speaking for. So I'm going to support the bill.
Oh, sir. Mr. Chair, briefly.
Representative Shoffler.
Yeah, and I will be supporting the bill, too. I share some of both of my colleagues here concerns on taxes, et cetera. But one thing I want to make sure, Mr. Chair, is when we come back into this building a few months from sine die to rebalance this budget, I do not want this money being used on anything but what we're collecting it for under this bill. Thank you.
Good item for the record. Representative Gilliam.
Mr. Chair, I was going to save my harangue for the actual bill vote, but since everybody's weighing in.
Yeah, please.
This is the toughest fee bill for me this session, and I cannot support it. And the thing that grieves me the most is what Representative Krieger just articulated. I don't really like nighttime hearings, but I was glad I was here, every member of the committee was here, to have that many citizens say, we could do this. And to me, they were citizens that they're the true environmentalist of this state. The things that they communicated about their willingness to work with an agency, the things they communicated about the importance of habitat and of getting kids involved and appreciating the state, it was very moving. Fish and Wildlife is the unfortunate victim of timing in this body of how we do things. In my opinion, we got it all backwards. And the big financial decisions haven't been made. Some have been addressed, but they haven't been made. And so I cannot pass on small fees to my constituents, even if in many ways I think they're justified, and then deliver to them the news in late June. And by the way, I nickeled and dimed the hunters here and the well guys there, and here's the really bad news for your taxes, and it's coming. And so I can't do this because of the order. And the last thing I would say, I want to say on record, is that this agency is an extraordinary agency with huge jurisdiction that I think they do the very best that they can. I have had my moments with this agency. And I am grateful that I got stuck on this, put on this committee. Because it's given me a greater appreciation for what they do. And this is not a vote in my, and nobody really cares how I vote, but I just thought I'd take this moment to talk to y'all. This, I do not want this to be construed as an anti-Fish and Wildlife. I have a great deal of respect for them, particularly for those individuals who work there and live in my district. I thought that Representative Wingard expressed it well, and I just thought I would beat it to death and make sure that I was on record. I appreciate what my colleagues have said, but I cannot do a fee bill, even as attractive as this one may be. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Okay. If there's no further discussion, I don't think I'm going to make a speech. I was here for Hunter's Night. I heard what I heard, and I'm happy to vote at this point and see what happens. So with that, Ezra, please call the roll.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Gillis.
No.
Representative Roper.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Winger.
No.
Vice Chair Van Ormen.
Excuse.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Chair Klein.
Aye. Motion passes, and the bill is sent to the floor as amended. And Representative Beyer, would you like to carry the bill?
Sure, I'd love to carry a female.
I'll carry it.
I don't mind.
You sure?
Yeah, I don't mind.
All right. I haven't had the pleasure of carrying one.
I have not.
All right. Representative Beyer will be our carrier.
They will be.
I'm going to close the... I have to close the work session after I've voted. Close the work session on House Bill 2218. And I am going to look at my agenda. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2222. This is also carried over from 4-7. This is the flip side of the equation for the angling licenses. Again, raising the extending the sunset and raising the fee from $2 to $4, if I remember right. And this one's for restoration and enhancement, and on the other side it was access and habitat. Uh-huh. Yeah, these programs are all set to sunset, and that's if we don't pass a bill at all, then they would go, even the $2 would go away. Be a loss of revenue to the agency and the public. Okay.
So, dash two.
So, yeah, we have dash two amendments.
There they are.
Just stand at ease for a moment here.
We haven't adopted the dash twos.
That's all we're saying about that. You know what the difference is?
I'm ready to come back out of recess. Representative Roblin.
Yeah, I would like to move that we suspend the rules and allow Representative Van Ormen to vote on House Bill 2218.
Representative Roblin moves suspension of the rules to for the purposes of allowing Representative Van Ormen to vote on House Bill 2218. Is there any objection?
2218? Oh, the first one. Oh, yes. Okay. Aye.
Well, just one second.
You haven't given me permission yet.
Wow. Seeing no objection, Ezra, could you please record your vote?
Vice Chair Van Ormen.
Thank you, Ezra. Aye.
So with that, I will...
He could have opened it and then closed it, but it's okay.
Sure. Okay.
Does the Vice Chair want to hear my speech about no fees?
Probably well, hear it again here in a second if you really need to.
Get my gavel.
I'll give it.
So I'll take a motion on the dash twos.
You want the twos? Mr. Chair?
Yep.
I would move the dash twos to House Bill 2222.
Representative Winger moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2222. Discussion, you'll see that online, for example, where was it? 4226. Between the dash ones and the dash twos, line 19, non-resident angling license. 5 to 10. The first one inadvertently had 5 to 6. The department cleaned up the bill, got new fiscals, and it's back in front of us. Yeah, so this one does get away from me. Oh. You know what? Actually, I'm not ready to move this bill yet. We haven't yet moved a bill to Ways and Means, and it's my interest in holding this until we get Farm to School moved first as our first order of business to go out of this committee to Ways and Means for the session.
You want to adopt the amendments?
We should adopt the amendments. Are there any objections to the dash twos? Seeing none, then we will. Their amendments are adopted. and then I'm going to close our work session on House Bill 2222 and come back to it. Okay, so we have a couple of bills. I'm going to open up work sessions on them separately. These are revenue items that the sponsors and or advocates have asked if we could get them over to revenue so they can start talking about them. We can talk about them if you want, but if not, we can just take motions and not have a lot of discussion, whatever your preference. I'm going to open a work session on the first one, which is 3112. And I would take a motion.
We'll have a discussion at all.
We can if we on yeah.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3112 be sent to the Committee on Revenue without recommendation.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 3112 be sent to the Committee on Revenue without recommendation. Discussion.
I was
Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, I was kind of wondering why this committee couldn't have the discussion on this bill. It seems like it's just as germane to this committee as any other. Representative Schaffler was also... he just voted. He also has concern as to why we're moving these bills from this committee. Earlier in the session, we had a bill or two that we didn't move because we thought it was germane. If there's some reason or instruction from the speaker, I just need to understand that.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Krieger. In both cases, the advocates for the bill would like to get it over to revenue. That's where it's going to live or die. And I asked, did you want our 3 or 4 cents added in to try and give it some momentum? And they said, well, with Representative Barnhart, that may or may not actually help or hurt us. So could you get him over there so we can start trying to work those members? And that's the basic reason. Representative Roblin.
I tend to agree with Representative Krieger on this, and I like both these bills. I have no problem with sending them. I would love to have sent them with a get-them-out-fast recommendation, but I'll accept that idea, and I will talk personally with the people that need to be talked to, because I think these are both good bills. But,
yeah.
And so I could go with no recommendation or with a really strong recommendation.
Well, actually, yeah, I was going to say I don't have any problem having recommendations. Yeah. I just didn't want to take a lot of time. I knew where this committee would be at with all these bills. So.
Mr. Chair, then I would like to amend my motion from without recommendation with a due pass recommendation.
There you go. Representative Krieger moves to amend his motion to be moving House Bill 3112 to revenue with a due pass recommendation.
Yes.
Is there discussion?
That makes me feel a little better.
Me too.
Yeah, no problem. Sorry about that, guys. No discussion. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Byron.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative Aye.
Aye.
I can't
say that.
You can.
Representative
Green. Aye. Vice Chair Aye. Vice Chair Green. Aye. House Bill motion passes and the measure is sent to the Committee on Revenue. Do our other one, probably same. We should change it to just be with, I assume, this is the inheritance tax fixes for ag and natural resource and fisher people. Let me get the work session open. This is 112. Open a work session on House Bill 3305. So, Representative Krieger. Would take a motion on 3305.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3305 be sent to the Committee on Revenue with a recommendation of a due pass.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 3305 to the Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I,
Representative Shoffley.
I don't know. What exactly are we fixing from 2 years ago with this bill?
Yep. Jeff Stone, Sean Cleave, why don't you come up and talk to us about what we are hoping the Committee on Revenue will fix from our really hard work to get it right the first two times we've worked on it. Oh, no problem. Please try and keep your frustration level that we're having to do this for a third time down, but welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jeff Stone, Oregon Association of Nurseries. It is my hope that the third time is the charm on this bill. During the ruling...
Yes, one second. I still need to close our work session on House Bill 3112 from before. Go ahead.
During the rulemaking exercise during after the last time that you passed it, let's say that rulemaking was challenging and had some definitional problems in actually making it work. So the object of this bill is to try to help the department with their rulemaking capacity and make it so people who actually have people who pass away and want to forward their farm, forestry operations, or fishery operations to their heir can actually do so in a manner that is comports with what your intent was in 2007 and 2008. Do you have anything to add?
For the record, Sean Cleave, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. Mr. Stone's correct. During rulemaking, some definitions that were produced don't translate well to agricultural operations, specifically for the example that I'll use on this bill. Currently, the definition of working capital is limited to a 12-month structure, and for Oregon agricultural operations, that, especially for nurseries or Christmas trees, that have a long-term product cycle between harvest, a 12-month definition is somewhat inflexible. So we worked with CPAs and tax practitioners, attorneys during the interim to identify what the industry standard would be for these types of definitions, and that's reflected in the draft.
Mr. Chair, may I?
Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. I really support our intention here, and I understand some good people got caught up in this, if I'm not wrong, because of these inaccurate, wrong definitions in rulemaking. The only thing I have to say is, I want my friends on the Revenue Committee and our good friends in the department to get it right this time, because it's rather frustrating for me to see this going on. And I know they can, I have confidence they can, but I hope, and I would ask you to, and I know you will, keep a close eye on this process, because I want to know what's going on before this gets to the floor so we can avoid all this from happening again. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffler, there's a bill on the Senate side, Senate Bill 347, that gets at these very issues, and we're working with the Wheat Growers League and others to try to help remedy those situations, but that's separate from this effort. This is purely on the rulemaking capacity of the department.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions for these gentlemen? And I'm correct in saying that you'd like to get this bill over to Revenue. This wasn't me being a bad person. that you'd like to get it going so we can have conversations over there.
Those are
Mr. Chair, we are grateful.
Yeah.
Those are separate issues.
Yeah. I just kind of lump them together if I can for the moment. Okay, thank you. Any further discussion on the motion to move 3305 to Revenue with the due pass recommendation? Okay. Ezra? Call the roll.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Dealy.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Wayne.
Aye.
Vice Chair Van Orman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Chair Trump.
Aye. Motion passes, and the bill goes to Committee on Revenue. Going to close the work session on House Bill 3305. Going to reopen our public hearing on House Bill 2924. and ask Mr. John Zielinski, who I noticed didn't bring any of the apple cinnamon donuts that are so freshly...
You guys have rules against accepting them.
You're right. You're right. I was going to buy them. I was going to pay.
Were they $50?
No.
Actually, the problem was they were entertainment as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I still don't have any entertainment.
You go out to this fruit stand and watch them be made. It is entertaining. They just walk there. It was like a little mini Krispy Kreme thing. Is that better? Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. My name is John Zielinski. I'm a fifth-generation farmer that lives and farms northeast of Salem. My two brothers and I own and operate Easy Orchards, Inc., a diversified modern agribusiness. My brothers manage the farm and wholesale operations, and I manage our efforts in farm direct marketing. On our farm, we grow apples, pears, peaches, pumpkins, field corn for a fall entertainment maze, and we sell many different types of produce in our farm market from a wide variety of farmers across the state. The Oregon Farm Direct Nutrition Program has a positive financial impact for many Oregon farmers. In our market, during peak summer season, during any one given week, I sell produce from as many as 15 different Oregon farmers. Even in slower times of the year, I offer produce from 5 to 6 different Oregon farmers. Many of the farmers that I purchase from also attend farmers markets that are sanctioned by local municipalities. 10 years ago, there were maybe a dozen farmers markets throughout Oregon. Today, from the Beaverton Farmers Market to the Joseph Farmers Market, from the Umpqua Valley Farmers Market to the Astoria Sunday Market, there will be over 100 farmers markets providing produce for our neighboring urban and suburban Oregonians. There are several hundred more farmers who operate farm direct stands and pick your own or you pick operations from their farms. The vast majority of farmers markets and many of the farm direct operations are approved by the State Farm Direct Nutrition Program to accept the senior nutrition and women and infant children vouchers. What does this mean for Oregon's farmers? Many small farmers are searching for ways to make ends meet. This program benefits primarily small family farms that are trying to survive and stay on the family farm. Some, like myself, have their own farm direct market. Others attend farmers markets once or twice each week. Either way, this program financially helps farmers succeed. The majority of the farmers that I know who are involved in this program have small family farms. The increased number of customers that the program enables, people who may otherwise never be our customers, provides a boost to the whole farm direct economy. I can speak from my own interactions with voucher recipients that this program helps the rural-urban interface. For many of the senior citizens, it gives them motivation to get out to the farm stands and the farmers and the farmers markets where they, as the program stipulates, can purchase fresh, healthy, locally grown produce. For the young mothers that use the program, it gives an alternative to shopping at large grocery outlets. For many of them, it is their first interaction with the people who grow the food they eat. My employees and I often give advice on how to prepare fresh produce, because many of the WIC recipients are only familiar with canned and pre-mixed foods. Both groups benefit nutritionally from the fresh local produce. The Oregon Farm Direct Nutrition Program is a win-win program for everybody involved. Senior citizens and mothers benefit nutritionally. The rural-urban interface is improved. Oregon farmers benefit financially. And all citizens of Oregon benefit from a healthier populace and agricultural economy. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Questions for John? I've got one. How was Disneyland?
Disneyland was fantastic.
Yeah.
Did you go on the Tower of Terror?
I did.
God, I love that ride.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife wouldn't go, but my daughter and I did.
And then, I think the next time I came in, you were in Europe or somewhere.
No, I was in Washington, D.C. for a week on behalf of Oregon Farm Bureau.
Yeah. It's like another country there. Might as well be somewhere else.
And I was late world. This morning because I was with the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce. So,
yeah.
Just, you know, just like you folks, it's busy being a giving back to the community.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate your work. Yeah, Vice Chair Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Clem. I just would like to make a comment, if I could, please.
Certainly.
It's basically just to tell you how gratified I am that you are helping families learn how to use good food and how to cook good food, because I do worry that we're in an age of process and they're losing the ability to do that. So thank you.
You're welcome. This particular, our financial downturn right now, my mother is on the board for Marion Polk Food Share, and they have more people than ever coming to their doors. But there's also, because of the cutbacks, more people than ever who don't know how to use raw ingredients because they've never had to, and everything does often come pre-mixed. But it's more economical to use it in its raw form. So it's a great program.
I have often said there is no joy in being right.
Representative Roblin. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was thinking that it would really be nice if when you came and testify, you always brought a map of how to get there.
Oh, I've got them on my business card.
Because I, for one, would love to have a map and make sure that I make
all
it
right.
The way, so.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, John.
At this point. Yeah,
and I don't remember where my sign-up sheet is, but you're on it. Deborah, is it? Or begins with a D? Catherine? Sorry.
Mr. Chair, yeah. I believe Representative Gilliam had something to say.
Oh, Representative Gilliam, did you want to? This is a constituent of yours, I think, too.
Yeah. What am I, invisible this morning?
I'm sorry.
We wish.
Now, it's all out of timing.
We messed it up. It's just awful.
I just wanted to know, when John was in Washington, if he'd got into the Dome of Power. Terror. See, you screwed it all up.
I know.
And I did. I'm
sorry.
And Representative Clem.
Representative Roblin.
I really did ask for the map so he'd know how to find it. He asked me how to find the place, so I got a map for him. So.
I request an immediate reason.
I think John's house is in your district. A bunch of his trees are over in mine, so we could just fight over him if you want. I've got a weapon here.
Here I am. Find it.
Use it.
I'm about people, not trees or something.
Okay, so, Catherine, welcome. We're in a public hearing on the bill. Please give us your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Clem and Committee. My name is Catherine Bradley. I'm the Administrator for the Office of Family Health in the Public Health Division, and the WIC program is in our division. And so I'm here today to provide the public health perspective on House Bill 2924 and a little bit of background and information about WIC. I apologize for not being here earlier. I had another hearing down the hall, so I appreciate your flexibility. As you know, and I think has been referred to earlier, the Nutrition and Health Screening Program for Women, Infants, and Children is what WIC is known for, and it's our premier nutrition education program in the state. And it currently administers the Farm Direct Nutrition Program, encouraging both seniors and WIC families. What this actually means is there are checks for about $20 for our WIC recipients and about $30 checks for our low-income senior recipients. And this has been in place for over 12 years currently, and we've seen a growth every year. We have an extremely positive partnership with our seniors with disability, and I believe that they spoke and provided testimony a little bit earlier. But this is one of the summer programs that really does benefit directly our farm and farmers, as was spoken to as well. What we are seeing in our WIC program are monthly increases in our caseload, as you would anticipate. We're seeing people return to WIC that probably thought they would not. Typically, what we tend to see is a drop-off, usually when children are about 2, 2.5 to 3, even though we can serve low-income families for children up to 5, because by that point in time, usually mothers and families are a little bit able to manage workload. The financing is not as easy. Getting to WIC has not been as much of a choice. What we're seeing are families return, as well as new families that previously have not actually accessed DHS services or WIC services, which is similar to other experiences across the system. This economic hardship is very significant, and that's why we think this is an important opportunity to increase the funds for food as a specific benefit. We serve just about 27% of our WIC participants currently with Farm Direct Nutrition dollars, so this would allow for for an expansion of that. It is important for us to note, of course, this is not in the governor's budget, so that we actually are not able to speak in support of it, but we are using this as an opportunity to be available to answer any questions you might have about WIC or the current and existing program. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here. I'm sorry for our behavior earlier. We know John, and we're a little out of control. Just say a little bit more about the program, not just the money part, but the program part, and about how this, I believe, empowers folks. John alluded to it in his testimony. To become more involved in their own nutrition and into in choices that they've got for their families.
Chair Clemon, Representative Gilliam, thank you very much. What WIC does is it's not a food stamp program, which I think most people who've had a little bit of contact really appreciate. It's really a nutrition education program. And so the focus that we have is really working with mothers of young families, pregnant women, because it serves pregnant women and low-income families up to 5 years of age of their children to really understand a different way of being able to support, treat, feed their children in a different modality. So much of the work that we really do in the nutrition program and the contact that we have is to really help families understand a different way of being able to do that. With childhood obesity being on the rise, this really is one of the most important aspects that we're very involved with in WIC. And it is true that we're dealing quite often with families that are not accustomed to doing a lot of fresh produce, a lot of fresh vegetables. And the farmers market really is such a wonderful benefit when we look at both the issues of what we're trying to do to support the economy as well as work with exposing people to different programs. We are in a process this year, actually, with making some pretty significant changes with the WIC program since the first time that it was introduced, and it's called Fresh Choices, and we are shifting, actually, to what most of us would consider to be an even healthier profile, more access to fresh fruits and vegetables within the stores, some soy opportunities, more of an emphasis on brown rice, some flexibility that reflects ethnic representation. For instance, tortillas and those sort of things, which there were more restrictions around. So it's undergoing a change and transition with that as well. We have nutritionists, and then we have staff that are trained in nutrition principles at each of our WIC clinics across the state. And currently now, 1 in 3 children under 5 actually has some services provided in WIC, and in our rural counties, it's actually 50% of our families and children with children under 5 that actually are working with WIC.
Thank
Representative
you, for Representative Gilliam, my experience with Head Start, all of the Head Start families are connected to WIC, mm-hmm. and the Head Start families are the lowest of the low when it comes to poverty standards. And so the WIC program is extremely important because it also supports what Head Start's trying to do with nutrition for families. And it's all in an attempt to help families have a healthier lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Represented by.
Thank you. I'm not sure whether to ask this or not, but do you know the technicalities of how the program works?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking in terms of being in a grocery store where a person has redeemed their WIC coupons. How does it work at, say, a farmer's market? Because I've been in a farmer's market, and you'll buy a few things at this stand, and you buy a few things at this stand. And usually the WIC certificates came, you know, just in one certificate. Is it different in this program?
Chair Clemon, Representative Byer, if I may, the staff person who runs the program is here today. May I invite her to join me?
Sure.
Because she can address the specifics. Maria? She would do a better job than I would.
Chair Clemon, committee. My name is Maria Menor, and I'm the Farm Direct Nutrition Program Coordinator with the Public Health Division. So, Representative Byer, to answer your question, the way that the Farm Direct Nutrition Program works is that WIC participants who receive the checks, as well as seniors, receive 10 individual checks that have a dollar amount related to them. So it may be either $3 or $4. Well, actually, it's not 10 checks, but a number of checks. And then they use the checks like cash. at the farmer's market. So if a WIC mom wants to purchase $4 worth of berries, she would hand the check over to an authorized farmer who is hanging a Farm Direct Nutrition Program sign, and she hands it over to the farmer as though it's cash.
Do they give cash back if she does? I mean, if it was not the exact amount?
Representative Byer, great question. They do not. No cash is given, and that is relayed in the training that we give authorized farmers. It's relayed in the training that we give to shoppers, and it's also right on the check.
Thank
no
you.
Cash given.
Thank you for your help.
Mm-hmm. Just to follow up on that, so when you say that a beneficiary gets $20, they get $20 in a series of increments broken down for them in $3 or $4 checks? It amounts to $20, is that the idea?
Representative Wingard, yes. The way that it works is that, like for example, this year, WIC participants will each receive $20 in $4 checks, so they will receive $5 checks.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please follow up.
So if they if they go up to the fruit stand and buy, and they want to buy $5 worth of something, they're giving two voucher, or does it essentially, do they try to, it's a point that they'll round to that number and the farmer will basically attempt to give them $4 worth of that, and their next option is to have another $4 of that. If that's the only thing the farmer vends, is that?
Representative Wingard, great question. We actually encourage our shoppers to supplement their checks with cash. So if a WIC mom has a $4 Farm Direct check and she wants to make like a $5.50 purchase, she would provide the $4 check plus $1.50 in cash, of her own cash. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And having observed in the farmers markets in our communities and stuff, I also want to acknowledge that an awful lot of these farmers who have these markets will take the $4 check on a package, say, of tomatoes or whatever. And oftentimes I've heard the other person saying, what is this? And they'll say, well, that's a whatever plant and whatever. And sometimes they'll say, and why don't you take one with you and here's how you cook it. I think we... Our people who are using these vouchers get more than their value for the money, because the farmers are very encouraging to people coming and being a first-time buyer, and they oftentimes add little things to that so that they start to understand that there's this bigger variety. And I just want to make sure that people really understand that not only is it supplementing, but I think the farmers are also helping. They enjoy having these new customers. They enjoy trying to explain to them where the food comes from and so on. And I think it's a great program, so I just wanted to thank you for that. And if you have any comments, you can.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, we've got this public hearing open. I'm going to acknowledge written testimony from the speaker that we have received. And I'm going to close our public hearing on House Bill 2924. We're going to acknowledge written testimony that we had received on Tuesday relating to House Bill 2223 from Mishler and Hester, and House Bill 2800, which we'll have later, from Sean Clee from the Oregon Farm Bureau.
Chair.
Representative Wingard.
Moving this bill today?
Not yet. And we're still trying to get our fiscal back on the farm to school bill before we do any other bills.
By the way, that hasn't stopped other committees.
Yeah, I know. It's just that there's a so
stopped everyone I'm on.
So we had a conversation, all of us, in the early orientations, I think, about sending bills to Ways and Means, and the theory for this session is, let's just not send them all down there and not have prioritization, and so that's why we haven't sent any yet, because the chance and the, I would call it a promise, but I'm not sure it's a promise, that the if we don't send everything and we only send a few and we send them in with some sort of priority, there's a greater chance that they'll actually be adopted. So that's partially why I'm holding back, because we have some other ones that are ready to go, but I want to have a discussion as a committee about, whether we send them at all. in some cases. I mean, I think we've got some that are no-brainers that are waiting, but there's some that I just want to have us chat further about as a committee before we decide whether to send them.
Mr. Chair,
because only I'm on the receiving end down there, and I have to lobby for these things once they get there.
Yeah.
Representative Gilliam?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I don't understand your logic at all, and I support you completely.
Thank you very much. Representative Roblin.
And I just wanted to point out, in case you hadn't mentioned that, and I'm pleased that you did, that we, on this committee, expect that anything we send will get a fair hearing and be passed, because we know there is a member here who is on the appropriate Ways and Means Committee.
Yep. With that, I've got to open.
Transparency in government.
I'm going to open our work sessions on House Bill 2097. I'm going to open one on 2096, though it's for discussion purposes. 2097 is the one I think we're going to be able to move. But I'm going to open work sessions on 2096 and 2097. And we'll need a motion on the dash twos for 2097.
Mr. Chair, I move dash twos in House Bill 2097.
The Chopper moves the dash twos on House Bill 2097.
Would like to
we can have some discussion before we move anything. Committee members, these are the two bills that came out of the Rural Policy Interim Committee before it got converted to rural communities. And you'll recall it was a discussion, pretty lengthy one, that we had about the carrier of last resort and what happens, particularly for rural telcos, when they are inheriting a subdivision or a destination resort or something where the carrier of last resort is no longer in operation and they're inheriting it. And 2097 is a process for them to be relieved of the obligation, and then another process for the folks who live inside to come back and say, no, we still need our landlines. And 2096 was banning exclusive agreements, so it might not happen in the first place. The roads would be open, and they would be able to potentially all lay their lines at the time the roads are open, and there wouldn't be exclusive agreements. Representative Wayne.
Well, I just was hoping that someone who's in supportive of 2097 would just come up and very briefly describe
dash twos.
The dash twos.
That would be great. Yep. Who? Grant, you want to come on up and talk about the dash twos?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brant Wolf with the Oregon Telecommunications Association, and actually I haven't seen any dash twos. I've seen dash ones, but I'm not sure what the dash twos are.
I'm glad we had someone come up to talk about them.
Well, Mr. Chair, someone had to request the dash twos.
Looks like something got added on page 2.
Well, it looks like it says delete line 12 through 23.
Everything is the same, it looks like, except there's some additional language on page 2.
There was an addition. Oh, it deleted the whole. It deleted the whole
2097.
Change. Why don't you say that for the record? Because I don't understand it.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there was a minor addition from the dash twos, and I apologize if Grant didn't get a copy. They first of all incorporate the dash ones, which is the original amendment provided by Grant. The change is at the end of Section 4, and it clarifies a difficulty I believe Representative Schaffler had with a hypothetical situation wherein members of the subdivision could wait and their neighbors would pay for the petition process, have services brought out, and not be required, that the neighbors who waited would not be required to pay, going to pay their share for that process to occur. The PUC, by the additional language, would distribute the costs evenly among the subdivision.
So one sentence.
Yeah, it is just Wingard. The last sentence, Mr. Chair, of the dash twos. The determination of cost allocation by the commission must also divide the costs allowed equitably among all customers of the territory to which service is being reinstated. That's the additional line in the dash twos.
So that's, as she described, that if you are, so you've requested to not be the carrier of last resort, you've been allowed, now someone's coming in to request, those petitioners, if it's only part of the group that are petitioning, but everyone lives in the subdivision, if it were approved, those costs would be distributed along everyone, not just the people who petitioned.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Shoffler.
It's because currently, I mean, if you have phone service, you don't pay for all those poles and that wire just come out to your house. The cost, as I understand it, is spread equally among the people that use the service, not just individually. If you're the last one on the line, would you have to pay all those tens of thousands of dollars to bring line out? Or would it be spread among all the people individually?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe we'd be okay with the Dash 2 amendments.
I did not request the amendment, Mr. Chair. If I did, I might know what I'm talking about.
No, I think I requested it after the conversation in lieu of some concerns about this hypothetical where some folks would not petition and then have the rest of their neighbors have to pay and then, hey, we get the landline. And this mm-hmm. addresses that. Representative Krieger?
I'm fine. Are you going to motion?
Yep. So actually, any objections to the Dash 2s? Okay. If not, so adopted. And then, yeah, motion on... Actually, well, yes, please, motion on the whole bill.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the House Bill 2097 be passed to the floor with a due pass as amended with the Dash 2s.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2097 be as amended be moved to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair, sorry, I should have asked this on the amendments. Did we have the Dash, you know, the problem with doing these spaced out so far sometimes is you forget what we talked about. So did we have the Dash ones and talk about them? So what is in the Dash ones?
Talk about the Dash ones. What?
Yes,
let's get Brent back up.
We did have that in a conversation, but
I kind of forgot myself. So if you want to come up and refresh us. It was a month ago.
Well, yes, sir.
It was a negotiated deal, but
please. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. It's basically in an instance where a developer has signed an exclusive agreement with someone to provide telecommunication services within a private subdivision or a gated community, what have you. The amended version of 2097 would give the carrier with the resort with the obligation to serve that resort and ability to petition the commission, the Public Utility Commission, for an exemption from that obligation. It also gives the people living in the resort area the ability to go to the commission in the event they need to get the service back, to petition them to get service back into their subdivision. And that's a very basic overview.
Thank you. Okay.
Representative Roblin.
Yeah, and it was the issue was the original bill basically cut them off. They didn't have any way, and so they came back and had this negotiation, and the commission and everybody agreed that everybody needed to have their day.
We have our PUC chairman here. I have no idea if he wants to comment or he's just here to watch, but when we have someone of that stature in the audience, if you want it, you're good. Okay. So, further discussion on 2097. I'm gonna support 2097. There's been a lot of work, but I will say I have some serious concerns about these exclusive agreements, which 2096 addresses. And I'm perhaps need to be educated on their usefulness and their role, and maybe that's the only reason I have concerns is I'm not very well educated on them, but I have some problems with them. However, a lot of folks have worked hard to make a process that can work for others, and so I'm happy to support the 2097 and let 2096 just go away.
I think under the circumstances, we better have it. Because you're never sure who's going to be surviving.
Any further discussion? Okay. Not the clerk, call the roll.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Dealey.
Aye.
Representative Roman.
Aye.
Representative Schott.
Aye.
Representative Wing.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Benham.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Krieger.
Aye.
Chair
Clark. Aye. Motion passes. The bill is sent to a floor. Representative Roblin will be our carrier.
I got it to you, so you might as well
give it back to me. Okay. Going to... Now let's go. I'm going to open work sessions on because we have an amendment that's going to take a little conversation. So I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2215. This is our firefighting protection bill for the session. And we have dash twos, which I'm sure Representative Roblin could explain.
If I have to find them first, then I can.
Committee members, you may recall we had we had an informational hearing on the fire program, and then we had a hearing on this bill, and we had a hearing on Representative Roblin's bill that helps change the program to try and become more of a true 50-50 instead of what it's become, which is in some cases like an 80-20 or 100% zero, and that's by having the state's role start at $1 on a 50-50 basis. And what we've attempted to do in the dash twos, if I've got it right, is roll that actual policy that was included in the other bill into the extension of the $15 million cap, so to make sure that if we extend that cap, it's 50-50 from dollar one going forward.
I think we have other people here who could explain this better, but my understanding is that what this does is really clarify that $15 million, you know, that the landowners pay, and in that deal, that it really is a 50-50 match. Part of that money goes to paying the annual emergency suppression costs, the other, the annual premium costs, and that's all included in that $15 million cap. And I believe that's it, but I think we do have people here that could express it more clearly from the department.
Either the department. Yeah, why don't we start with the department and see if we need to go further than that.
We move in the dash twos.
Just the dash twos?
I think the dash ones are included in the dash twos, but I have to check
that. The dash ones incorporate the dash ones.
Chair, before the department goes,
Representative,
and a nod of heads will be for me. There's a bunch of good people back there that represent a bunch of good people out to work out in the forest lane. Are you all squared away on this? I see heads nodding yes. Okay, that's good enough for me, but I'd love to hear from the department, too.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, thank you. I am Paul Bell. I'm the Chief of Fire Protection for Oregon Department of Forestry. The Dash 2 amendments is proposed to House Bill 2215. The portion that they affect are the $25 million insurance deductible that we pay. And the current process for that, as we speak today, is the first $15 million of that deductible is paid for out of the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, which is the assessment against the landowners to provide the money for it. The second layer of that deductible is $10 million, which it would be paid out of the state's general fund. The Dash 2 amendments propose to take the $25 million and have it paid dollar for dollar as it's expended, so it becomes part of the true 50-50 component of the program. The base level of the budget is currently funded at 50-50. However, that could change in the governor's recommended budget.
So it basically clarifies that issue of getting the 50-50 match all the way through the payment. Currently, as you noticed, in the past, what's happened is it's moved about 84% for the landowners, and that's really because we haven't exceeded the $15 million cap, and so the state hasn't had to put any of their general fund $10 million into paying it at all for the last number of years. It's all come out of that landowner share, and that's what skewed it so clearly in being paid mostly by the landowners. And what this bill tries to do, including the amendments, is to make it so that when you look next time, it'll be a 50-50 match because everybody's putting their money in at the same time.
Representative Schaffler?
Only to comment this, and I've learned this as a legislator. I did not grow up in Oregon, and I did not have the benefit of working out in the forest as a youth. But the best way to prevent these fires, Mr. Chair, is to manage these forests, whether it's on private, state, or federal land. And the government-owned and operated land, in my opinion, well, I think Oregon does a good job, but the federal government ain't doing anything. And I understand they're doing things that even make it worse. So I just wanted to throw that in there. If we want to prevent fires, we have to get out there and manage. Oregon, if Oregon does one thing really well and good and right, it's lumber, wood fiber, and all the products that come with it. We know how to do it. This is the mecca, the center of the universe when it comes to logging and milling lumber and wood fiber products. And we are not taking great enough advantage of it. And the federal government has to let us on back on our land and use it at a far higher degree than frequency than we are. And it's criminal that they aren't allowing us on there to go out there and prevent these fires and take advantage of this great product. All right, Mr. Chair, I'll shut up now.
Yeah. Representative Krieger.
I'm fine.
You're good? Okay. So, do we have a motion on the floor on
no.
the dash twos? Please.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the dash two amendments into House Bill 2215.
Representative Krieger moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2215. Any discussion? Representative Rowland.
I do want to really make it clear that people understand that what this also does is it continues the disproportionate issue with respect to that when we went to the $25 million insurance policy that landowners stepped forward and paid the extra five, so 10 and 5, based on some other things. This continues that for the next period of time. And again, we have had on that a clause where it ends, you know, because it's the one thing that we can have, that landowners have some control over, paying that extra $5 million as opposed to the 10 and 10. And this keeps that going for the next time, which is helpful, I think, in the whole overall understanding of how this bill goes. And so they agreed a number of years ago to add the extra $5 million. I think we need to acknowledge that they've done that. And for the most part, they've been paying their extra $5 million all these years as opposed to other people.
So just my comment on the dash two. This is a pretty big deal. It's a big policy change, but it's really getting us back to what the policy is. So it's not a policy change. The policy stays the same. It's finally realizing the policy that the state's had for quite some time would be, I think, the right way to say it. And I know this is a session where when it gets to Ways and Means, you know, there's people were down there scrambling for dimes, but this industry is in deep financial straits, and this is the time to inject some stimulus in, and this will help. And all we're really doing is saying we're going to honor what we've had on the books all this time. It's not the best stimulus in the world to just keep our word, but I would take it at this point compared to the past. Representative Shaw.
Mr. Chair, this is a priority. This is a Ways and Means priority, in my humble opinion.
Still holding it till after Farm to School, but I will still get it out today, I promise you. So, if there's no objections to the amendments, then the amendments are considered adopted. And I'm going to close the work session on this one. I'm going to open the work session. This is not a Ways and Means, but I think now that we've amended the other bill, probably okay on the House Bill 2214, work session on House Bill 2214. This is an extension of the harvest tax. Has to go over to revenue. And so I would take a motion on House Bill 2214.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2214 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2214 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Is there discussion? We need to bring some folks up. We can. This is a harvest tax bill. We had some testimony about what the harvest tax goes to pay for, a variety of functions. We had concerns from the industry, certainly given their climate. I think we could probably have, if somebody wants someone from the industry, come up and talk. But I've had a lot of conversations that per the other assistance to honor our word on the 50-50 split, they're far more comfortable having this bill move forward in the process at this point. Representative Shoffler.
Well, Mr. Chair, I believe the line is blank.
Mm-hmm.
if I'm not wrong, in the bill, unless the amendment changed it. And my question is the same question to the good people back there that actually represent the people that do this work. If they're squared away with this bill, satisfactory with this bill, is that correct? Okay, I see heads nodding yes, and that's good enough for me then.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Winger.
Do we anticipate, I mean, the bill reads as it extends, but with the blanks, there's always the potential for the tax to be increased.
That's exactly right.
By the Revenue Committee?
Right.
I think that's right. I mean, they could.
Is that the rates?
If
Representative Roman?
So I guess I'm looking for some guidance on
if
what
they
the
weren't blank.
Is.
Yeah. They could change them. I mean,
no, but I guess I'm looking for some guidance on what the intention is on this bill in the future. I mean, as far as is the tax rate going to be kept at its current rate, or
no.
Do you anticipate that they're looking to raise additional revenue?
Well, I haven't had any conversations with the Revenue Committee, but when it comes to the floor, I can tell you I won't be supporting in this particular revenue bill a change from past practice on the harvest tax.
That's about as
good as I can give you without being on the committee or having talked to them. Representative Roblin.
I would probably put it, I don't intend to vote for this bill if my friends in the industry haven't approved whether it goes up or down.
Yeah, right.
So they might move it down, and if you stand to your word, you aren't going to vote for it, and I would hope you'd reconsider.
I'll reconsider right now, and I will work with the industry on how they feel about paying a higher or lower rate, because you're right, technically it could go down, and then I've really shot myself, haven't I? Thank you, Mr. Principal. Mr. Representative Rowland. Representative Schaffler.
Mr. Chair, I share our colleagues' concern about this blank, and I can tell you right now, unless the good people who work in the forest come and tell me they're happy with any kind of a number in this blank, I will be a no on the floor, and that's it. So that's what I want to hear. That's where my vote's going to be. That's where my heart is, and I can't wait to follow up on it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winger, one last comment. I always hesitate to pass it up an opportunity to vote no on a bill that pertains to the Oregon Forest Practices Act. Because of the concerns that I have about how we manage our forests in this state and the condition of the economy, especially in rural Oregon. But I'm going to restrain myself today and support moving the bill.
So, 2214, we've got a motion on the floor. Any further discussion? Great. Clerk, we'll call the roll.
Representative Meyer.
Aye.
Representative Gilliam.
Aye.
Representative
Logan. Aye.
Representative Trump.
Aye.
Representative Winger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Van Orden.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Chair Cronin.
Aye. Motion passes, and the bill is sent to the Committee on Revenue. Yeah, we're there. I'm going to have the committee stand in recess, and we're going to go stand at the fiscal desk until that comes. So, all stay tuned. Well, no, I'm not yet. I'm going to reconvene the committee. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2800. We've got some -2 amendments I'd like to get on the table if we could.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that we adopt the -2 amendments into House Bill 2800.
Representative Krieger moves to adopt the -2 amendments to House Bill 2800. Discussion. I will ask Deborah Kane to come up since she's here from Portland, and unfortunately we aren't going to be able to move this bill out today. But since you're here and you made the trip, the -2 amendments, maybe you could explain them, but certainly the match portion, because that's a big part of them.
Chair Clem, you have -2 amendments in front of you that I don't have, so...
That's how we operate.
Got them. So they are changing the Department of Agriculture language to the Economic and Community Development Department. I can talk about that. There's the language around supplanting, may not supplant, and...
Is it the one that's handwritten?
No, I hope not.
That's the one that says
-2.
Right there. Oh, there we are. Thank you.
You can explain the -1s if you want as well.
See you, paper today.
I think they incorporate...
So the -2s are instead of -1. Okay, thank you.
Both, don't we? Maybe you'll stand in recess for a moment. The -2s appear to incorporate the -1s and also make another change that the fiscal office requested clarification on in terms of the pass-through from the Oregon Economic Community Development over to the Department of Education.
Has anybody moved the -2s?
Mm-hmm. Representative Krieger did move the -2s. We're in discussion on them. So just the broader issues involved with amending the bill, period. When the bill was drafted, one key part didn't get included, and that was we were asking schools to use their federal dollars that they now have the legal ability to use to buy Oregon, and we would then match their purchasing of Oregon products up to a certain amount in order to double the amount of investment in Oregon agriculture. We wanted them to have to show some goodwill with their federal money as well to Oregon Ag. And so that is in both the -1 and -2s, getting that kind of matching requirement correct. And then the other big change is because as Dr. Cruzy talked about in sort of technical details that we can only hope to understand if we ever got our PhDs, the economic development that comes to the state through this bill, to me at least, warranted that this bill ought to be set up and tested against other economic development programs the state has. And the best way to do that is to have it pass through the Economic Community Development Department, where those programs live and reside, and also the, you know, very likely the subcommittee in Ways and Means that deals with all the budgets for economic and community development. Because if this bill were to go through the Department of Agriculture, it would come to the Natural Resources Subcommittee, where we have no authority to cut a current economic development program that's not as good as this and replace this with it, and they do. So I have no idea if they will do it, but I'm going to be down there lobbying like crazy and combing through programs and trying to make the case that there are existing programs that do not serve the state as well as this particular program would.
The children are our future.
Because as both somebody in the 80s and Representative Van Lommen just said, the children are our future. Representative Schauffler.
Mr. Chair, we have the department right there, the OECDD. We've already passed their budget out of the...
No.
We have out of the sub?
No.
At public hearings, that's right. So we still, therefore, we do have an opportunity, and I have the pleasure of sitting on that committee. I can't remember what we've passed out or not, so I'd be happy to go and examine that with the good people down there and see what we can do.
I did not know that when I said that. I'm sorry, but I'm also very happy, right?
No, that's okay. You know, I mean, we can do the math and look at things. I will say this, for they are doing good things, and they are creating and retaining jobs in the state, and I think we need to be very careful with what we do with this money. But I definitely think we should have the conversation and see, mm-hmm. and ask them to do the math and see what's going on here.
I think it's time to think about agriculture.
Can I call on you first?
Okay.
Representative Van Orman.
No, I'll shut up.
Okay. So, is there any objection to the -2 amendments? Seeing none, the bill is amended. And now, unfortunately, I'm going to close a work session on House Bill 2800. I'm going to carry over House Bills till Tuesday. House Bills 2924, 2222, 2215, and House Bill 2800. And with that, thank you for your extreme patience with me today. I was down at the OSU Vet Hospital at 6 this morning dropping OG off for his spleen removal surgery, so I'm slightly rattled. Thank you very much. Join the committee.